speckling of the faint freckles on his face, denser along the prominent cheekbone, and then more scattered across the slight hollow below. His eyes, I could see when I was this close, were speckled too, the foggy gray-green flecked with shards of a more vivid green. And they seemed to shine when he focused this intently on a task.
"Here we go," he said.
He made a quick gesture with his hand. I leaned closer to see the screen, but not too near. When I closed that distance, every inch of my skin woke up to his presence. A hint of a smell that had to be him reached me, lightly musky with a hint of mint.
"So," Kai said, motioning at the screen. "That first transaction you saw was actually your stepmother moving her money from a joint account she has with your father to a private account that's only in her name. Then she transferred it again to, Cora Conwin. Does that name ring any bells?"
My lips parted. My heart had been beating a little fast before, but now it was outright thumping. "Derek, my fiancé," I forced out. "Cora is his mother. The lady and head of his witching family, until one of his sisters claimed that role." Kai's eyes widened.
"And you didn't know anything about your stepmom passing on this money to her? This isn't like some wedding tradition or something."
"Not one I've ever heard of. If it was, there'd be no reason to keep it secret." Snuff my spark. Why would she be paying his family all that money? There's got to be something going on that she's not telling me. Or Dad, if she'd bothered to transfer it to a separate account before giving it to her intended recipient. She must have told him it was for something else. Which meant whatever it was something he wouldn't approve of. My chest clenched. Kyler grasped my hand.
"Rose," he said, "it'll be okay."
"How can it be okay?" I demanded. "My stepmother is having secret discussions about special techniques. She's paying huge amounts of money to my fiancé's family in secret. She's hiding all of it, even from my dad."
"But now we know. We'll figure it out from here."
"I can't even prove it. There's no legitimate way I could bring this to my dad." I waved at the computer screen. "He'd believe her over you. It's not like I can explain how you figured it out."
"So we'll find more proof, Rose."
He raised his other hand to touch the side of my face, bringing my gaze back to his.
"We can do this. You can do this. Look at how much you've been able to unravel already."
My breath came a little steadier as I stared back at him. "How can you be so sure?" He gave me a crooked smile.
"Because I know you. And I don't believe there's anything you can't do, especially when you've got us behind you."
The gentle contact of his fingers against my cheek sent a wash of heat through me. The faith and admiration in his expression seared right through to my soul. I'd like to say I couldn't have helped what happened next, but I probably could have stopped myself. It's just that right in that moment, I didn't want to. I leaned across those last few inches and pressed my lips to his. Kai's breath hitched. His fingers slid back into my hair. His lips were warm, and the kiss he offered in return so tender and... A jitter of energy shot up from the center of my chest, right behind my ribcage. No, not just a jitter. A spark. A flash of magical electricity so heady it tingled right up to the roof of my mouth. I jerked back, my body suddenly shaking. How could that... It wasn't possible. Kai didn't have a witching bone in his body. He couldn't have lit my spark. And yet I could still feel it, sizzling faintly behind my sternum.
"Rose,"
Kai said, his voice rough, and I snapped the rest of the way back to reality. Kai didn't have a witching bone in his body. No, and I had no business kissing him anyway. I was supposed to be getting married in a month and a half's time to Derek. If I screwed that up, I might as well kiss my magic goodbye. What the hell had I been thinking? I scrambled to my feet. "Thank you," I blurted out. "For the computer stuff. I have to go." I snatched up my phone and bolted for the door before I could do anything even more stupid than I already had. Philomena caught up with me at the bottom of the stairs.
You couldn't have interrupted that? I asked. Yelled fire? Thrown something at my head? Her smile was both bright and strained. I've never been one to stand between a woman and what she truly wants. I want my magic, I said. The tingle of energy inside me had already flickered out. Had I even really felt it? It didn't matter whether the sensation had been real or my imagination. I couldn't do that again. I couldn't let one kiss distract me. All I could focus on right now was uncovering the rest of my stepmother's plans before it was too late.
10. Gin. Rose by mid-morning sunlight was my favorite rose. The soft glow brought out the pink in her pale cheeks and the gloss in her black hair. Seeing her in it made my fingers itch for a paintbrush or a stick of oil pastel. Of course, there were other roses I'd never seen. Rose by twilight, rose when she first opened her eyes in the morning. Those might be even more arresting. I'd have liked to see them all, but I'd take what I got, which was mid-morning rose. I wish I had something better to offer, she was saying as we ambled down the street to my studio. She'd just finished visiting with my mother, trying to make up for what her family had done wrong 11 years ago. If I'd known back then... It's fine, Briar Rose, I said before she could go on. Like the fairy tale, right? You were asleep, unknowing, and now you've woken up. What matters is what you do now. That stuff from the past, you can't let it drag you down. She groaned. Easy to say, not so easy to do. I knew the shadows in her eyes had as much to do with present concerns as anything way back then. How have things been going with your stepmother? Oh, you know, she made a face at the ground. I'm still playing along, acting like everything's fine. That's all I really can do until I figure out more about what's going on. I just need something obvious I can take to my dad. Once I have him on my side, I'll be fine. And your fiancé? I asked. I didn't have anything against the guy exactly, or I wouldn't have, if he'd made Rose happy. But I was pretty sure he didn't. Every time she or anyone else mentioned him, her mouth tightened just for a second. Like it did right now. I'm acting like everything's fine with him, too, she said. I have no idea if he even knows about the payoff, after all. It didn't go to him. His parents might be manipulating him like Celestine is trying to manipulate me, if that is what she's doing. You could postpone the wedding until you have... No, Rose broke in sharply. Jin, I can't. There are parts of the situation you don't understand. Parts she wasn't willing to tell me. It was all right. I could give her that space, like we always had. But when she looked that downcast, I couldn't just leave it. I'm sure there are, I said. But I'm also sure that there's a way out of any bad situation, even if you can't see it right away. So keep looking, all right? And we'll look with you. I know you will, she said. And I got the smile I'd been hoping for. Maybe it wasn't as relaxed or as happy as she deserved to feel, but I could keep working on that. I'd closed my little gallery space for the morning. I unlocked the door and motioned Rose in with a little bow. Her lips parted as she ventured inside, taking in the same mingled smells of oils and acrylics, glue and gesso that I was. Our feet clattered loud against the floor in the quiet. Wow, Rose said, turning around. These aren't all yours. A couple dozen paintings and mixed media pieces scattered the white walls. 5 sculptures posed on display stands spaced around the room. I'd wanted to capture the feeling of all those great modern art galleries I'd gotten to visit over the years around the world, squeezed into miniature form. Only about a quarter of the pieces are mine, I agreed. I take works on consignment from local artists around the state. The place doesn't get a lot of visitors, but I've made it into a few guidebooks, so we get some tourists stopping by, and people from around here come by more often than you might think. I didn't sell enough to fully justify the space, but my dad covered half the costs, and I had no problem taking advantage of that generosity. It was his way of apologizing for not being around half the time. "This is yours," Rose said, pointing to a red-tinged piece with an arching bridge. The corner of my mouth twitched up. She could recognize me in my work already, huh? "There's a lot of Paris in that one," I said. "And this?" She motioned to a jumbled city street, streaked with blue. "Berlin." She raised her eyebrows at me. "You've gotten around a lot." I grinned back. My dad thought it'd be good for me to take some time after high school, broaden my horizons, and the band he was substituting bass for was on a worldwide tour. I got to tag along for some pretty wild adventures. Lots of material to draw from. Rose wandered deeper into the room and paused by another work of mine. Fragments of glass pressed into the blues and greens gleamed under the overhead lights. She stared at it for a moment and then looked at me. "This is the stream on my estate." I nodded. She swiveled on her heel, scanning the room, and found the other one in just a few seconds. A stone wall draped with vines, lit with the shifting colors of a clouded sunrise. Those were just the two I had out on display. "I still get a lot of inspiration from those times, too," I said. "There was something really special about that time, wasn't there? The way we all bounced off each other, but somehow kept a perfect harmony. For 6 years, the six of us had roamed Rose's property together, and I couldn't remember a single fight that had lasted beyond one visit." "Yeah," Rose said softly. "I miss that." The words hit me with a punch of emotion so sudden I didn't even think before saying, "Me too." Maybe that was true, but like I'd said to her before, there was no point in dwelling on what was gone. What I wanted was a Rose as bright and lively as she'd been back then. How could she think she was bound to whatever jerk her family had set her up with? I stepped closer to her and gave a strand of her hair a playful tug. "I'd like to paint you sometime, you know. Not that I have much hope of doing you justice," she laughed. "I don't think I'm quite that stunning." "Ah, that's just because you haven't seen yourself through someone else's eyes. The line of your cheek, the angle of your jaw." I traced a finger down her face. "It's calling to be put on canvas, I'm telling you." A hint of glow came into her face then. It took all my self-control not to keep trailing my hand downward to take in the other curves of her body. She was taken, and I could respect that. But maybe I'd already overstepped a boundary. Rose blinked, and the glow faded. She backed up a step, looking around the gallery one more time. "It's gorgeous," she said, with more distance in her voice than had been there before. "I'll have to come back when I've got more time to take it in. Today I've been away long enough as it is, but thank you for showing me." I got a flash of a smile, and then she was slipping out the door. As I watched it swinging shut, a strange ache welled up in my chest, as if I'd just lost something I couldn't live without. That was ridiculous. The only thing I needed was my art. Nothing good came from tying your happiness to any person other than yourself. I wanted to enjoy Rose's company, and for her to enjoy mine. I wasn't looking for more than that. Not from anyone. But as I headed up to my apartment over the gallery, the uneasy ache remained.
11. Rose. "My goodness," Philomena said, strolling past the bookcases. "I don't recall facing an interrogation when I intended to get married, which, I'll remind you, has happened at least half a dozen times. This isn't my idea," I told her silently. To the high witching figures across the library table from me, I gave only my most polite smile. The scrutiny of the pair who'd come to conduct my and Derek's pre-consorting interviews made my skin itch, but the comforting smell of books all around me eased my nerves a little. The woman of the pair tapped the end of her pen against the table. "Rosalind Hollowell," Do you confirm your intention to take Derek Conwin as your consort and husband, bringing him into your family and giving him your name? Absolutely, I said, hoping my smile hadn't just gotten too tight. It wasn't as if they could tell I'd just been kissing another guy 4 days ago, or that I'd wanted to kiss a totally different guy yesterday. I could keep all that guilt and all my doubts squashed down. I had to. The man nodded with an expression that seemed inappropriately grave.
I see from your father's records that you've received extensive tutoring in the forms and symbols of magical practice. Do you feel prepared to take on the power of your spark? Any concerns you'd like to discuss?
More than ready, I said. I probably would have felt ready with half the training Dad had insisted on. I have no concerns at all. Well, other than the fact that my spark had seemed to react to a guy with no magical heritage at all the other day. But the more distance I got from that moment with Kyler, the more sure I was that I'd been wrong. The excitement of my first real kiss had simply felt like what I imagined the lighting of my spark might. It wasn't as if I could ask these two for their opinion on the subject anyway.
And what career path do you see for yourself once you're fully settled into witching life?
The woman asked. That was an easier topic. I've already been helping commit to computer and organize the records of the official archive, I said. My supervisor there has said they'd be happy to take me on in a role of more responsibility once I can bring my magic to bear. And I've been working on a private project, compiling a history of modern witching. This time, both of my questioners nodded.
There may be work for you along that line to serve the assembly more directly.
The man said,
it would be a shame to see the power you can expect to wield put only to our history, rather than our present and future.
A tingle raced through me at his words. The power you can expect to wield. I knew that was why Dad insisted on the training. The Hallowell blood, which had run from his grandmother and his mother into him, his mother's only child, before he'd passed it on to me, was strong with the spark. But hearing a member of the Witching Assembly, the governing body over all those of witching descent, made it feel even more certain. I'll be interested in hearing about the possibilities, I said. I think it's important to have clear records of both our past and what's happening now. That answer earned me a couple of muted smiles, which was more than I'd gotten so far. The assembly witches were always so dour. Maybe I didn't want to become one of them through my work after all.
Another matter we always consider at this stage, the woman said, shuffling her papers. Have you given any thought to when you'd begin having children?
Moldy cinders, that was the last thing I wanted to be thinking about right now. Being tied to Derek, not just through ceremony, but bearing his children? I'd set that idea aside until I'd gotten my head and my heart in better order. I believe we'd give it at least a few years, I said. So we have a chance to strengthen our bond, and I'll have adjusted to my spark. What's the rush?
Indeed, the man said. We do find a waiting period before progressing to the next stage of the relationship is wise. Just remember that when you're ready, you'll need to register your intent with the assembly before you perform the magic to engage the quickening.
Of course, I said. I couldn't get pregnant unless I brought my spark to the task. One of the little quirks of witch physiology, which Meredith had told me once was for our own protection. Children are the loveliest things in the world, but a pregnant woman is a vulnerable woman, and there have been many times when we witches faced far too much danger to make that decision lightly.
Speaking of rushing,
the woman paused, fixing me with a steady look that held what appeared to be genuine concern.
I must remind you that in every case recorded, if a spark isn't fully kindled by a witch's 25th birthday, it won't kindle at all. I understand you've left your consorting rather late. Your plans appear to be on track, but you'll want to ensure they stay that way. Even if you feel your spark lighting some, if you've started to become close to your intended, nothing is set until the consorting is complete.
I gave her a tight smile. I know, I said. Thank you.
Well, it sounds as if everything is in order, then.
The man stood up.
Thank you for your time, Miss Hallowell.
That was obviously my cue to leave. Thank you for seeing us, I said with a respectful bob of my head, and left while they were gathering their things. I ended up in the breakfast room, nibbling on one of the mini-muffins that had been left over from our meal, when Derek came in. My back stiffened automatically. I inhaled deeply, willing myself to relax. What I'd said to Jin was true. Derek might be as much a pawn in my stepmother's dealings as I was. Whether I believed that or not, I couldn't throw this engagement away until I was sure. Not when my entire life as a practicing witch was on the line. He came to a stop beside me and gave me a smile that looked genuine.
Being asked personal questions by total strangers, he said, always my favorite thing.
I had to laugh. Tell me about it. Well, at least that part of the formalities is over.
I hope you only had good things to say about me.
Naturally, I said. But the truth was they hadn't really asked me much about him at all, had they? Had they questioned him all that much about how he saw me? Probably he was just joking. I offered him the sparse plate of muffins, watching his face. So he didn't like books, and he hadn't been the most considerate of my pretended illness. But I hadn't seen any signs he was in on some conspiracy against me. I'd never come across him talking to my stepmother outside of our regular family conversations. Philomena paced at the other side of the room with brisk steps and twitches of her huge skirt. I'm not certain about this, Rose. I'm not going in blindly, I said. I won't marry him unless I'm sure he isn't part of any scheme. But until I know one way or the other, I can't afford to push him away. She huffed. I don't like him, either way. I know, I said. But I might not have been his first choice in partner either, you know? Derek plucked up one of the mini-muffins and tipped it to me, as if in a toast.
To our consorting and our marriage.
I held up the last bite of mine, ignoring the twist in my gut. To us. Of course, as soon as I'd swallowed that bite, I couldn't think of what else to say. In the last 3 weeks of walks and meals and drives admiring the countryside, we'd pretty much exhausted all possible small talk, and an awful lot of mid-sized talk, too. What did you talk about with someone who wasn't interested in about half of the things you were, and wasn't supposed to know about the other things you'd been up to? Who might be up to things you wouldn't be happy to know about? Say, have you been plotting with my stepmother lately? Wasn't going to cut it. Maybe I could get at his true feelings about our impending partnership in a less direct way. Are you starting to feel settled in here? I asked. I know it's got to be pretty different from where you grew up. Derek chuckled.
The weather's certainly different from New Orleans, but I'm an adaptable sort. I think I'll do fine here.
You don't mind having to make that big a change? As a witching man with sisters, he'd have known he couldn't keep his last name and his family property, but he might have intended to stay in Louisiana in the absence of extra incentives. He tucked his arm around my waist so smoothly my nerves only jumped a little. The corners of his light brown eyes crinkled with a smile.
I think what I'll have here with you more than makes up for anything I'm giving up.
He lowered his head, close enough that his intention was clear, but slowly enough that I could have pulled away from the kiss. Consorts-to-be often continued to hold off on much physical intimacy before the ceremony, which would encourage a passion for each other. But getting a little cozy at this committed stage wasn't discouraged. My pulse skittered, but I held myself in place. I could get a taste of my real spark, and that might give me all the answer I needed. So I tipped my head and let Derek meet my mouth with his. His lips slid against mine, coaxing mine apart with an ease I wouldn't have expected. Who had he kissed in the past to learn how to do that? I gripped his shirt for balance, the closeness of him and the heat of his mouth making me abruptly dizzy. But doubt stayed clenched tight around my heart, and not a hint of a glimmer lit inside me. My chest felt as hollow as a reed. I eased back from him, my pulse thudding. Derek smiled at me again, looking pleased. I tried to mimic his expression, as if that kiss had given me exactly what I'd been looking for. As if it hadn't been a complete and total failure. 12. Rose. As estate manager, Meredith had an office to herself, a small room at the back of the house. Of course, she was so busy overseeing the rest of the staff that she was rarely in it, except for first thing in the morning, when she went over the day's itinerary, and last thing at night, when she filed away any results of that day's work. So it was already pitch black beyond the window when I knocked on her door. Another April storm had kicked up, the wind howling past the manor's walls, loud enough that Meredith didn't hear me until I knocked a second time, a little harder. She glanced up and saw me through the gap where the door stood slightly ajar. "Oh, Rose, come on in, honey." Her office was warmer than the hall. A space heater was humming in the corner. I leaned against the cabinet next to it, soaking up its warmth, while Meredith finished sorting through the last batch of receipts and work forms. With a twitch of her fingers, she brought her magic to bear on the bottom of one paper and then another, affixing her magical signature to the documents that required it. Then she turned to me, leaning her sturdy frame against the desk. Even at the end of the day, her hair remained neatly pinned in her braid, not a white or gray strand out of place. I wondered if she used a little magic to hold it there, the same way she encouraged her face to stay smooth. She looked no older than Celestine, who was around 50, even though I knew Meredith had to be at least a couple decades older. It had always seemed impolite to ask that sort of thing. Meredith was as much a witch as I was, but being from a lesser family, she'd ended up running ours instead of starting her own. Two generations from cradle to consorting. She did have a consort and husband of her own, Anton, who served as Dad's accountant, and she'd always been my best source for witching info when I'd had questions Dad was too busy to answer, or I was too embarrassed to ask him about. "What's on your mind?" she said now with a knowing look. I bit my lip. "I was just curious. How do you know for sure that your spark will light with someone? Does the consorting ceremony make it happen, or..." I trailed off, uncertain how to express what I wanted to without saying more than I did. Meredith gave me a gentle smile. "It's a confusing time, isn't it? So much anticipation, but also so much to worry about. You can be sure your spark will light with Derek Rose. He's a witching man, and the ceremony will align your hearts and passions to provoke the kindling." "So it's just the ceremony that makes it happen," I said. I know that Dad and Celestine were, close before they officially became consorts, and Celestine kept her magic even though she lost her first husband years before. And there's always that talk about how the men should be careful about who they give their intimacy to before the consorting. "Well, that's where it gets complicated," Meredith said. "It's not all one thing or another. Where there's mutual attraction, the man's energies can light and sustain the spark without any formal binding. The more powerful your emotional bond, the easier you'll kindle, too. But immediate passion is hardly necessary. Sometimes it's better without. There's no shortage of tales of young witches getting swept up in dalliances with some tempting man, only to find that excitement runs dry before long." "So it's okay if you're not feeling swept away." She nodded. "You want sure and steady. Build up that light over time with growing affection. The ceremony will help you open up to each other." "Does that mean you didn't feel your spark until you completed the consorting with Anton?" I said on the verge of relief. Meredith laughed lightly. "Oh no, child. Even a little affection can give you a flicker, if you give it the opportunity. Not enough for any major magicking, of course, and it fades much faster than after you're properly kindled." She cocked her head at me. "Are you considering getting a head start on your relations with Derek? If you're feeling ready, you may as well start laying that groundwork. You can still take things slowly."
I don't know, I said. My thoughts were stuck on that one thing she'd said. "Even a little affection can give you a flicker." I'd felt at least a little affection for Derek in that moment, despite my doubts, hadn't I? Thinking of him giving up his home to be here with me. So if nothing had sparked, not even a flicker, I resisted the urge to hug myself. Maybe I'd gotten my answer after all. That would have to mean he had no affection for me. Not a shred. He talked as if he did, smiled at me as if he did, It could have been my fault, with all my suspicions of him, or all of that was a lie. The pond our forest stream fed into looked just the same as it always had when we were kids. I slowed to a stop as I reached the edge. Minnows dimpled the otherwise still surface of the water. Sparrows chattered in the trees and sunlight poured through the gap in their foliage across the mossy bank. Jin was already there, the sun making the blue streaks in his hair stand out even brighter against the black. He was leaning over, trailing the end of a stick he'd picked up through the mud between the moss. "You've always got to be sketching something, don't you?" I said with a smile. I set my hand against the cool granite surface of the boulder at the edge of the pond, the one I'd used to duck behind to shimmy out of the clothes I'd hidden my bathing suit under, way back when. The boys would have simply tossed off shirts and pants and jumped in wearing their underthings. Jin grinned at me, and my face warmed. Maybe it wasn't such a great idea to be thinking about my guys, even all those years ago, mostly undressed. My emotions were jumbled up enough as it was.
"What can I say?" he said, twirling the stick. "It's an obsession. I'll cop to that, but as obsessions go, you've got to admit there are a lot worse."
"Okay, that's fair," I said, propping myself against the boulder. Although, maybe calling it just an obsession is downplaying the situation a little. Didn't you travel around, like, half the world chasing inspiration?
"I guess so. But I didn't really have to. Finding it all over the world was just more fun than trying to get it all in one place."
"Uh-huh." I couldn't help raising my eyebrows. "And is that a policy you apply to all sorts of areas of your life? Suddenly I'm imagining you leaving a trail of broken hearts all across the globe." Jen's dark eyes gleamed with amusement.
"I won't say there's no truth at all in that either, but I swear I've never made promises I didn't intend to keep."
"Always a gentleman, even when you're being a ladies' man."
"I don't know any other way to be,"
he said with that flirty smile. I wasn't sure if he meant the gentleman part or the ladies' man part. Maybe both. Curiosity prickled at me despite myself. "None of those girls kept your interest long enough to make any promises?" I asked.
"Well..."
Jen cocked his head. His tone turned a bit more serious.
"There are places and people that give you what you're craving in that moment, right? And that's a pretty wonderful thing. The ones that give you something so essential it becomes a part of your soul, that type is a lot harder to find."
His gaze caught mine across the pond for a beat longer than felt completely casual. A warm tingling spread down my chest. He meant the estate, of course. The estate had worked its way into his soul. Not me. Didn't he? My hand dropped to the ribbon I'd tied around my wrist this morning. Deep purple, as rich as Jin's unwavering passion. I'd picked it as if wearing it would help me tap into my own feelings, or at least figure out what the hell they were. Jin waved his stick in the air, breaking the moment.
"Look at me, turning into a philosopher. When I get into a serious mood, you know it's probably time to start ignoring me."
He winked, but he still couldn't quite seem to look away. I swallowed hard, trying to think of how to answer him, and other voices carried through the trees. I turned, not sure if I was glad for the interruption or regretting it. Seth and Kyler had come together. They came to a stop between me and Jin at the edge of the pond. And suddenly my heart was thumping for a completely different reason. I hadn't seen Kyler since I'd kissed him. He clapped his hands now with his usual energy, but his gaze twitched away from mine a moment after ours met. Yep, this was plenty awkward. I didn't have any idea how to smooth that weirdness over, either.
"Looks like we're all here," he said. "I told Damon, but who knows whether he'll show."
I grasped for a topic that was safer than hookups or illicit kisses. The reason we were here in the first place. "You said Mr. Cortland is out of town right now. How did you find that out?" Kai was the one who'd sent the text to the group announcing that fact and prompting this meetup.
"One of the clients I do IT work for is the post office,"
Kai said.
"I saw a temporary mail hold come in for James Cortland. Nothing to be delivered for a 10-day stretch. Usually people only do that if they're going on vacation."
He gave me a hopeful smile before his gray-green eyes twitched away again. Somehow that made me look at his lips, which reminded me that I kind of wanted to try another kiss with him.
Arg.
I was the one who'd suggested we meet in person, to talk the situation through. Partly because I'd hoped seeing the guys would help me sort out my feelings. So far, I was only feeling more muddled. So much for that plan. Seth ran his fingers over the short, tawny waves of his hair. Kai's twin was the one who'd suggested we meet here. He felt I'd already risked too much coming into town as often as I had.
"Since it doesn't seem smart to make any decisions based on assumptions,"
he said,
"I've taken a couple drives past the house. There's no car in the drive. The second time I went right up and knocked on the front door and got no answer."
He spread his hands.
"It does look like he's gone."
Watching him move those solid arms through the air was making me feel all kinds of weird, too. Rose, get a grip. Two kisses and my hormones had gone haywire. Maybe all those romance novels had finally oversaturated my brain. "I could double-check," I said. "I have a history project I've been working on. I could tell my dad I'm thinking of paying a call on Mr. Cortland to see if he has any records I could use. Dad's probably been in touch with him enough to be able to warn me that he's away. But then what?" Jin looked up from where he'd been tracing patterns in the pond with his stick.
"I think the idea is we sneak in there somehow. Take a look around. See if there's any evidence showing what your stepmother asked for his help with, right?"
He glanced at the twins with one eyebrow arched. Seth grimaced.
"I wouldn't normally say breaking and entering is a good idea, but if we could do it without actually breaking anything, and we wouldn't be stealing anything, just looking. How easy do you think it'd be to get in there?"
Kai asked, looking at me steadily for the first time.
"Is there anything we need to worry about, other than, regular locks?"
Anything magical, he meant, without knowing exactly what he meant. I sucked in a breath, considering. Master Cortland understood magic. Studying it and teaching its theory and techniques was his trade. But like all witching men, he'd only been a witness to it, never the caster. His wife and consort had passed on a few years ago. Regularly warding the house to prevent entry wasn't remotely practical for someone who couldn't adjust those wards if they happened to want to let someone in from time to time. Even we didn't ward the estate like that. Only rooms like Celestine's office that she felt needed special protection. Too much hassle to constantly manage a barrier like that when there wasn't any real need. "I don't think so," I said. "But it's not like regular locks will just open because we want them to, either. Wouldn't it be nice if that kiss with Derek had lit up my spark? I could have used a little magic right now." Of course, the thought of kissing him again to try, and possibly being reminded all over again of the affection that didn't exist between us, made my stomach clench. This expedition wouldn't just be an attempt to reveal my stepmother's treachery, but his as well.
"I'm sure I can look up..."
Kai started. A twig snapped in the woods nearby. I flinched, spinning around. There was no reason for anyone to come out this way, but if one of the staff had randomly taken a stroll deep into the woods at just this time... I started to motion the guys back behind the boulder. Then I caught a glimpse of the approaching figure through the trees, and my hand dropped to my side. My pulse hiccuped, but not out of panic. Damon halted at the edge of the clearing.
"So, here we are,"
he said in a cool tone. His hands were dug tight in the pockets of his leather jacket, and his eyes stayed narrowed when he glanced around our gathering.
"I figured I might as well see the place again, just once."
His posture was guarded from shoulders to feet, but I couldn't help smiling. "I'm glad you came." He shrugged, keeping his distance from us, and scuffed his sneaker against the mossy stones. Kyler eyed him for a moment as if waiting to see if Damon would say anything else. When the other guy didn't, he launched back into planning.
"Like I was saying, there have to be ways to break in without actually breaking in. I can find instructions for anything online. Look up some lock-picking videos, do a little practice at home, and we're good to go."
He waggled his fingers with a grin. Seth frowned.
"I know you're the master researcher, Kai, But do we really want to stake our lack of criminal records on you learning how to become an expert lock picker in a couple of days?
I focus on the lock, Jin said breezily. There might be a window we can open. He might not even lock the doors in the first place. Most people in town don't.
No, I'm pretty sure Mr. Cortland would, I said, especially if he's gone for 10 days. He might not want to overdo the security, but he didn't want just anyone wandering in there either. I guess there could be...
For fuck's sake.
Damon broke in, rolling his eyes.
You guys are hopeless. I can pick a lock. Does that solve everything?
We all stared at him. Another smile tugged at my lips, but I didn't give in to it, in case looking too eager would scare him off.
It does if you're gonna come with us, I said.
Damon sighed. He bowed his head, the jagged line of his dark brown hair falling to shadow his eyes.
I guess I'm in then,
he muttered. But he looked up at me through that shadow right after, as if he wanted my smile after all.
13. Seth. Well, that's the whole house, my brother said, sounding frustrated. I can't think of anything we didn't check. He stood in the center of James Cortland's dining room, hands on his hips, light brown hair askew from bending to peer behind cabinets and under side tables. Right now he was glowering at the antique maple buffet, as if he could force it to give up some secret through sheer force of will. Given the strength of Kyler's will when he put his mind to something, maybe he wasn't totally wrong to try. Jin replaced the painting he'd glanced behind with a careful thump against the wall. There's still the grounds, he pointed out. The old Victorian house had a yard about as big as one of the town blocks, nothing on the same scope as Rose's estate, but a sizable property. I don't think we should go wandering around out there, I said. People drive by here going to and from town all the time. There's too much chance we'd be seen. And what the hell are the chances this geezer's buried as evidence in the garden or something? Damien said, his lips curling disdainfully as he took one last look around the room. He'd probably be too afraid of getting dirt under his fingernails. The house was incredibly well kept. I'd seen a pretty wide range of homes during the renovation projects I'd worked on with my dad, but I couldn't remember any other building I'd been in with the furniture so orderly, not a speck of dust anywhere, not even a spot of mildew in the bathroom. Even though the place had been shut up tight, the air wasn't stuffy, just dry and faintly bready smelling. Rose's hand had come to rest on the top of the maple table, which was just as solid and polished as the buffet. Her expression was distant. She was trying to think of something we might have missed, I guessed. She'd been counting on us finding something here, something that could either reassure her or confirm her stepmother's intentions. My only memory of Rose's stepmom was the day she'd barged in on our little gathering in the woods, years and years ago, the flash in the woman's eyes that had looked almost electric, the sharp clamp of the air around my body when I'd tried to reach for Rose. I hadn't been able to move, not a finger, not my mouth to shout, until after the woman had already dragged Rose away. My stomach clenched. We hadn't been able to do anything for Rose back then. We had to come through now. I guess we're done then, Rose said finally. It makes sense if he's involved in anything shady that he might not keep any evidence, even in private. But her brow was still knit. She'd expected more than this. The longer we're here, the more chance we'll get caught. We'd better get going. We slunk through the shadowed rooms to the back door. Damon had, true to his word, disengaged the lock on it with just a couple of metal rods. At the time, Jin had made a joking comment about new skills he'd developed, and Damon had retorted with a glare and a mutter about how some people had to make the best of bad options. And no one had said anything more about it after that. Now Damon strode out first, hardly pausing to check that the road outside was clear. Jin squeezed Rose's shoulder and said in a jaunty tone, More mysteries still to uncover. But they don't stand a chance with the bunch of us on the case, do they? I couldn't help noticing the flush that had crept into Rose's cheeks at his touch. My brother gave both her and me a playful salute. I'll keep at it on the data side of things. See you soon. They slipped out. Rose brushed her hand through her hair as we waited for them to disappear down the road. We'd figured it was less noticeable if we didn't all cross the yard in a pack, but now I had no one to distract me from her. She tested the lock to make sure it would engage when we shut the door behind us. He'll come in the front anyway, she said, as if to herself, as much to me. We left everything else the way it was, even if the lock doesn't quite latch. He'll probably just figure he didn't set it properly before he left. It looks to me like the door would lock just fine, I said. After all the buildings I'd worked on in the last 5 years, I should at least be able to comment on that factor with certainty. Rose glanced up at me. The sun was getting low outside, and in the dimming light her dark green eyes looked almost as black as her hair. A soft, liquid black that I could almost see the worries behind. God, this close to her I could smell her, too. A delicate freshness that made me think of spring lilacs. Before I knew it, the words were tumbling out. You go ahead. I want to stay and do one last sweep of the place. I'll make sure it's locked up when I leave. Rose blinked, startled. Are you sure? Yeah. I'll feel better knowing we covered everything twice. She nodded with a grateful smile that almost unknotted my stomach all on its own. Then one corner of her mouth quirked higher. I had the urge to brush my thumb over that dimple. I had the urge to do a hell of a lot more than that, if I was being completely honest. Are you still glad I'm back? She said. Her tone was lightly teasing, but something in her gaze told me she wasn't just kidding around. Now that I'm getting you into all sorts of potential trouble? I did touch her then. There was nothing in the universe that could have stopped my hand from rising to rest on her waist, just for a moment. The revel in the warmth of her skin seeping through the fabric of her shirt. Not a single regret, I said. You need me, I'm here. The heat between us rose by a few degrees as we looked at each other. I made myself drop my hand. Rose stepped back with a breath that sounded slightly shaky. I'd better let you get to it, she said. Stay safe. If you think you need to get out of here, just go. Of course, I said. When she was gone, I stood for a moment in the back hall, getting my bearings. What the hell was I even doing? A good question. One I asked myself way too much these days. I didn't really want to be here, in a house we'd broken into. I didn't really want to be most of the places I found myself most days. Construction wasn't exactly my calling. It was just the easiest way to make ends meet, because I had no idea what else I'd be better off doing. I was sure of one thing, though. Even if this situation was crazy, even if I never said a word to her about how I felt, I'd do anything to protect Rose. That had always been true. And somehow the 11 years she'd been gone hadn't shaken my instinctive devotion one bit. One solid thing I could hang my hat on. So here I was. I moved back through the house slowly, methodically, as if I were here to inspect its construction for flaws, not searching for hidden evidence. Everything looked the same, and as innocuous as it had the first time. I slunk through the upstairs rooms, suppressing my discomfort as I edged around the guy's bed. Even if he were scheming with Rose's stepmother, walking around in some stranger's bedroom was more intrusive than I'd ever have wanted to get. I found nothing there anyway. I headed downstairs again, ready to give up, but as I came into the front hall, my gaze slid over the wood paneling along the side of the staircase and paused. The spacing of those slats in the middle didn't totally make sense, did it? I stepped closer, running my fingers over the panels. The slats were set almost as if to support a hinge. But why would there be a hinge here unless... I crouched down and pressed the oddly sized panel hard. It clicked and swung open to reveal a narrow compartment on the other side. A few books with cracked leather covers lay in a stack there, a newer-looking notebook on top of them. Holding my breath, I picked up the notebook. I had to squint to make out the words. The pages were filled with starkly neat handwriting that matched the house's impeccable interior. Something about pests in the back garden, something about the weather, something about a boat. The notations around those subjects didn't make much sense to me. Arm positions and degrees and direction of flow. But they didn't seem to have anything to do with Rose's worries, so I kept skimming on. The dates in the top right corners were from before Rose had returned, anyway. About halfway through, I hit on the last pages with any writing. The top of one of them said CH, binding. The date was from just a couple weeks ago. CH. Celestine Hallowell? My heart thumped faster. I pulled out my phone. In the dim light, I wasn't sure the camera would capture all of the light strokes of the pen, so I started typing up everything Cortland had written. A vine, a dagger, a backward stream of water to channel the flow. Something about the consort harmony. I still had no idea what he might be planning. I just hoped it'd mean something to Rose when I sent it to her.
14. Rose. My sharp inhale cut through the quiet in my bedroom. I almost dropped my prepaid phone, but instead I kept staring at it, tensed where I'd sat on the floor to retrieve it from under the bookcase. My gaze scanned the word Seth had written a second time. CH. And binding. These notes had to be on the same matter Master Cortland had been talking to my stepmother about. What were the chances he'd been investigating bindings in some other way that related to those initials? The rest of the remarks Seth had related word for word were vague. Brainstorming, I guessed. A vine split and retied. A dagger brought to bear? If water is streamed backward, it may channel the flow against the tide. The consort harmony, an alteration. Reversing polarities? Tangle one and then the other. Mixed in were little asides and brackets, like as per HV, and consult YSN for confirmation. Books or fellow academics he was gathering information from, presumably. I had no idea how to decipher those. But the fragments of a picture were enough. My stepmother wanted a binding. A binding that had to do with my consort ceremony. Unless she had some secret daughter who just happened to be undergoing that partnering at the exact same time. Something to do with reversing it, or turning the connection against itself. What did that even mean? Rose? Philomena ventured. She settled into the armchair beside me and peered down at my hunched form. What's the matter? The enormity of the situation clogged my throat. It was real now. It was utterly real. My consorting, I said. Celestine isn't just meddling with my marriage using money, she's trying to change the actual ceremony somehow. Not a chance it was to my benefit, either. Even if I'd been inclined to give my stepmother the benefit of the doubt, which I wasn't, daggers were only used to aid focus in more complicated magicking that involved severing or separation, or outright violence, none of which were factors anyone would welcome at a consorting. I've always said she's the worst kind of witch, Phil said. So what are we going to do about it? I don't know. All I had was Seth's secondhand report. He'd left the notebook behind in Master Cortland's house, as he should have. Who knew what chaos would result if my former tutor discovered a book like that missing? But if I understood what Celestine was trying to accomplish better, I might be able to interpret her magicking. I pushed myself to my feet. I think I'd better start asking some more questions. Meredith had been out back when I'd returned to the house, checking the new planting in the gardens. I darted to the stairs and down, my gut still twisted tight.
Rose!
My father's voice carried from the doorway of the front living room. I stopped halfway down the hall and turned. He was smiling when our eyes met, but his expression fell as he walked closer to me.
"Is everything all right, Lamb? You look upset, and you're running off in quite the hurry."
My lips parted and then pressed shut again. An ache formed at the base of my throat. I wanted to tell him, wanted to see his hazel eyes fill with affectionate concern, wanted to hear his warm baritone tell me he'd see that the problem was solved. When it had been just the two of us in our family, no matter how busy he'd gotten with his work, I'd been able to turn to Dad for anything. The nights when the boys had been home and Meredith off duty, he'd been my whole world, reading stories to me in the library, sneaking down to the kitchen with me to grab that last slice of pie to share. But Celestine had started to worm her way into our lives when I was 10, and nothing had been quite the same since. Whatever he saw in her, he cared about her enough to have promised her his loyalty. Anything else, anything she wasn't involved in, I could have trusted he'd be on my side. But this? I needed enough proof to make him sure, beyond any doubt. I needed there to be no way for Dad to argue that I was simply making unfair assumptions. When I had that, he'd have my back completely. I just didn't have it yet. I swallowed hard and forced a smile. Everything's fine. I just remembered a message I forgot to pass on to Meredith. A little distracted, with everything going on. You know. Dad chuckled.
Of course. Well, you'd better hurry and find her then.
To my relief, I found Meredith in the gardens where I'd expected. She was scowling at a couple of newly planted lemon trees at the end of a bed of flowers. These were meant to go on the other side, she said as I came over to join her. Well, the boys will just have to dig them up and move them over tomorrow. Evening was falling. The gardening staff had gone home for the night. I pitched my voice low so no one could hear from an open window. Meredith, there's something else I need to ask you about. She turned to me, her pale eyebrows rising. Go ahead, Rose. With the number of strange questions I was coming to our estate manager with, she was going to start wondering if I'd developed some sort of psychosis. I wavered and decided I was better off playing along with that idea. I clasped my hands in front of me. I guess it's nerves. With the consorting so close, I can't help worrying about things that seem silly. There isn't any way that the ceremony can be adjusted to, I don't know, change the outcome somehow, or hurt someone. Meredith shook her head. You've spent too much time holed away with all those books. I promise you, any story like that is only a fairy tale, child. It'll be your stepmother conducting the ceremony. I know the two of you haven't seen eye to eye all the time, and the Spark knows I've had my share of complaints, but you must know she wouldn't mean you outright harm. I didn't know that. Not at all. But this was exactly why I couldn't talk to Dad. If even Meredith reacted like this to a question without any accusation... I focused on the other part of her answer. Books? I don't actually remember reading anything about mixed-up consorting. Oh, I'm sure you did when you were younger. Your father collects everything, and you read everything. She let out an amused huff. Clearly some idea got stuck in your head somewhere. But the ceremony is all very straightforward. You'd have to really be trying to get it wrong. So, set your mind at ease. You hear? I ducked my head. Sorry to bother you. She waved me off. Oh, badger me whenever you want. I'm glad to talk your head out of the clouds as needed. I didn't think she'd have been very happy if she'd known I'd taken her advice, and then headed straight to the library. Philomena reappeared beside me as I trailed my fingers over the book's spines, scanning for the section I wanted. Dad's system of organization wasn't entirely intuitive. "Do you know what you're looking for?" Phil asked. "Witching stories. Our legends and that sort of thing. There have been some collections gathered over the years when people got around to writing them down. It sounded like that's what Meredith was talking about." My hand stilled over one shelf. Tales of the Witching Past, Witching Folklore, a compilation of witching stories. Here we are. And what are we looking for in these? Phil leaned her head over my shoulder as I pulled the first volume off the shelf. any stories that have to do with consorting. I said. I glanced over the first book's table of contents, shoved it back into the row, and grabbed the next. The autumn